Hello, everybody. This is Joseph G. with the good news of 12-Step Recovery, Rum Radio, and rumradio.org, the Big Book sponsorship website, the most comprehensive Big Book sponsorship website in the known and the unknown universe. And if you really look close, probably there's even some information available in Uranus. I'd like to thank our WNAH, our host radio station, AM radio station out of Nashville, Tennessee. Boyd Carter and Tony the Horse avails us of this hour to their listening audience and to their customers as a public service presentation. They believe that the 12 steps is a viable and spiritual message that goes out to their customers into the world on their internet feed, that this might help the next sufferer. This is our primary purpose, is to stay sober and help the next alcoholic achieve sobriety. That's our only purpose, why we do this. I'd like to thank Recovery Today magazine. It's recoverytoday.net. Great stuff in there, great articles. They've even posted some of my stuff, so In that effort, just a few. I don't have anything in this month, but it's still, nevertheless, it's still a very good resource. You can never have too many tools. I believe that there's always another, somebody always knows a little bit more than I do. Only a little, though. Wanted to thank Harold. Harold B. is our co-host in this segment and been with us for some time now. Harold is in the family recovery field. He goes to families in the region, troubled families with drugs and alcohol and psychological problems, and tries to do his best to help the family reconnect. I believe the family is the basic unit of our society, and as the family goes, so does the nation. So I applaud Harold for the great work that he does. Harold?
Well, thank you, Joseph. It's nice to be on the air again and exploring Tradition 7 with you tonight. I welcome all of our listeners. If it's possible, call the number. Joseph will give it to you in a minute. And join in the conversation. You can listen live on the radio, or you can listen on your telephone. You don't have to share. It's really great technology, and it's an honor for me to be able to give back the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, the steps and the meetings and the people in the rooms have definitely saved my life. I wouldn't be here without that, and so it's my way of giving back to not only appear on the radio station, but to apply the principles that we're talking about, which is there's nothing that works to help us stay sober as intensive work with another alcoholic. So that's what we're dedicated to. And I want to acknowledge Joseph for his giving. He's been helped and has many years of recovery. And so he put together the website and the whole concept of promoting sponsorship. Well, not promoting it, but supporting it and educating about it, because that is what has helped him the most. And so his way of giving back is putting together the website, putting together the radio broadcast, and keeping that going at his own expense. It doesn't make any money. In fact, it costs money. And he has gladly put thousands into this thing to make it happen. And so I want to acknowledge and appreciate that. Joseph?
Thanks, Harold. You know, you stumbled on the word promote. And that's a bad word in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. One of the traditions states that we adhere to attraction, not promotion, and press, radios, and films. Of course, this is before the internet. But you got to remember, inside the rooms of AA, we do promote.
Yes.
And originally, AA used to promote billboards. They were on press, radio, and films when they first got started, and then decided that this isn't the way to do it. So there is promotion that goes on. Yes, I do promote this. I promote this in the rooms. I promote it, you know, by advertising in some areas, and but it's usually in the recovery areas that I promote this thing. And, you know, okay, so I make no money at it. When I get promotion, I always affix it to somebody's going to get a reward for doing that effort. I try to remain as anonymous as I possibly can be, so I don't speak for AA. This is not an AA site. This is Rum Radio. And what I say here is not affiliated with AA in the sense that I'm not part of AA in the outward sense. I am a part of AA in the inward sense, but this is Rum Radio. And I try to get the message out in the most efficient way available to me today. I wanted to promote something else here while I got you on the air. I just put a new post to the website, to therumradio.org. We had a meeting, and it was in the meeting we discussed the sex inventory in the fourth step. And something we don't usually talk about, but I got a little quips here that I wanted to pass on before we get into Tradition 7. And I also want to give out the phone number. If any brave souls out there would like to participate in the conversation, you're more than welcome. It's 949-534-0621. Again, area code 949-534-0621. It's called Sex Us, Sex E, and Sex M. I wouldn't recommend sex, drugs, or insanity for everyone, but they've always worked well for me. Hunter Thompson. I'm a heroin addict. I need to have sex with women who have saved someone's life. Matt Hedberg. Sex is emotion in motion. Mae West. Giggle, giggle, shame, and kibble. It's a discussion on the sex inventory, size, lies, and a little dribble. I consider it a good right. It's interesting. I end it this way. Sponsees are always quick to wish to make amends to former girlfriends. I suggest some of these amends are best left unsaid and avoid the sparks that may raise the dead. And at the end, this is the last part. I'm at the age where food has taken the place of sex in my life. In fact, I've just had a mirror put over my kitchen table. Roger Danger. I try to put some light stuff in there. Oscar Wilde said life is much too important to take seriously. And we have Rule 62, which states, do not take yourself seriously. Don't take yourself so seriously as that you become ineffective in relating to the other sufferer. What we do, we're dealing here with life and death issues, so I think it's important to remember we got to keep it light sometimes. People's lives are at stake. Okay, so sex, I have it sex, S-E-X-T, which is not about sex. Sex, the tradition, I'm sorry, I got the wrong puppy up there. We're in seven. Sep. S-E-P-T, SEP, Tradition 7. Seven states, the short form, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. The long version, the AA group themselves ought to be fully supported by voluntary contributions of their own members. We think that each group should soon achieve this ideal, that any public solicitation of funds using the name of Alcoholics Anonymous is highly dangerous, whether by groups, clubs, hospitals, or other outside agencies. That acceptance of a large gift from any source or of contributions carry an obligation, any obligation whatever is unwise. Then, too, we view with much concern those AA treasuries, which continue beyond prudent reserves to accumulate funds for no stated AA purpose. Experience has often warned us that nothing can so surely destroy our spiritual heritages as the feudal disputes over property, money, and authority. We don't say that in the meetings, but that is the long form of it. If this is your first AA, this is how we start out our meetings. If this is your first AA meeting, it's on us. And it's a reminder that the maximum individual contribution is no more than $3,000. If you got, give more. Remember, Australia has kangaroos, and in the like, AA Down Under has much bigger pockets. You know what I'm saying with that, Harold? In Australia, their minimum individual donation is $10,000 in Australia. In America, it's $3,000. No individual can donate more than $3,000 to AA. AA has gone to court to disavow.
Is that per day or per week or per year?
I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know. I assume, which I hate to do, is per incident. So I don't know. Like, if you wanted to do $3,000 a day, I guess you might be able to do that. But any individual cannot donate more than $3,000 at a time. I don't know what the verbiage is. It's $10,000 in Australia, $3,000 in America.
Interesting.
Self-supporting. And I say that as a joke sometimes in a meeting when I'm passing the hat. If it's your first meeting, it's on us. If it's your last meeting, please don't take anything out. And let's remember, we have some high rollers in here. No more than $3,000 individual contributions can be accepted. You should get a laugh out of that. Self-supporting alcoholics, who ever heard of such a thing? Yet we find that's what we have to be. This principle is telling evidence of the profound change that AA has wrought in all of us. Everybody knows the active alcoholism scream that they have no troubles. Money can't cure. Always we've had our hands out, time out of mind. We've been dependent upon somebody, usually money-wise. When a society composed entirely of alcoholics says it's going to pay its bills, that's really news. Hear ye, hear all about it. Uncle Jack, the town drunk, has paid all his bills, and even some were rumored to be on time. Hear ye, Stillman, step 11. Overheard in a meeting, if I had enough money, I wouldn't need God. Blasphemy, as his judgment was made sure, until I reflected on how often I courted the golden calf for my only sense of well-being. My absolute fortress of security, and a feigned admiration for the teller, for did he not say what most truly thought, but did not have the courage to utter the view from the land of the lost? A lot of us thought that way. If I had enough money, I could be self-sufficient. I could take care of any. This is from the Pawnbroker. Did you ever see that movie, Harold?
No, but that really is a valid principle. I've been in my scripture study. I've been studying the fact that we make gods out of any number of things. And if I begin to think that I'm self-sufficient because I have enough money in this bank or that bank, and I do begin to forget God, I'm in big trouble. Joseph?
Yeah, thank you, Harold. This is from the Pawnbroker. The guy, the hero, was Saul Mazerman. He was a refugee, a survivor from Auschwitz, and he was the pawnbroker. He says, I do not believe in God, or art, or science, or newspapers, or politics, or philosophy. Jesus Ortiz, this was his protege. Then, Mr. Teacher, ain't there nothing you do believe in? Saul Nazman, money. If all the rich people in the world divided up their money among themselves, it wouldn't be enough to go around. Christina Speed. A feast is meant for laughter, and wine maketh merry, but money answereth all things. You know, that's in the scriptures.
Yes.
And then I have under it, never underestimate the effectiveness of a straight cash bribe. Claude Cockburn. That's what actually that scripture was talking about. At the time, you could buy anything. You could buy the law. You could buy your way out of anything. That's what they were talking about. You could bribe your way out of anything. But money answereth all things. Probably no AA tradition had the labor pains this one did. In early times, we were all broke. When you add to this habitual supposition that people ought to give money to alcoholics trying to stay sober, it can be understood why we thought we deserved a pile of folding money. What great things AA would be able to do with it, but only enough people who had money thought otherwise. They figured that it was high time we now, sober, paid our own way. So our fellowship stayed poor because it had to. There was another reason for our collective poverty. It's soon apparent that while alcoholics would spend lavishly on 12-step cases, they had a terrific aversion to dropping money into a meeting place, hat for group purposes. We were astounded to find that we were as tight as a bark on a tree. So AA, the movement, started and stayed broke, while its individual members waxed prosperous. Treating the whole world as it works for you don't suggest you're special. It means you're an ass with a working mouth and a lacking bank account. The primary purpose group here in Houston attracts many of the very young as 14, which is a little disconcerting to me as I'm approaching the lauded status of codger. They are mostly heavy cigarette smokers, having given up drugs and alcohol. All that's left is sex, cigarettes, and the internet. At this point in time, a 20-fag pack can easily cost $7. The first time I gave up the habit was because a pack went up to the outrageous price of 50 cents. I found it extremely easy to give up the habit since I had been able to do it 1,000 times successfully. The very young, with their innate sense of entitlement, often shun the passing of the collection basket that oftentimes than not, it comes up near transparent. I had quipped from the meeting chair on occasion, if you're buying cigarettes and not putting a couple of bucks in the basket, where's your singleness of purpose? A little chafe and a rustle in the seats as the hat came back with a little bit more cushioning. Youth is best time to be rich and the best time to be poor, Euripides. Youth is wasted on the Seminoles. You get that? Youth is wasted on the Seminoles. Brand Flakes pet Ute, you know, like the Ute Indians from Utah. Seminoles from Florida. Youth is wasted on the Seminoles. Brand Flakes, 10 cents. Maryland, 1939. Lux Laundry Soap, 22 cents. Indiana, 1935. Suntan Oil. Noxema Medicated Cream for Pimples, 49 cents. Texas, 1935. Movie Ticket, 10 cents. Matinee, 20 cents. Evening, 1933-34. Minimum wage was established around that time at 33 cents per hour. Harold?
Yes. I can remember when gasoline was 25 cents a gallon, and I had my first car was a 56 Chev, and of course that was, when was that? That was in 66 or 65. So a 9-year-old car. And I bought it with my lawn mowing money. for $275. It ran great. I wish I had it today. But the it's interesting to trace back the price of a gallon of milk, the price of a loaf of bread. Back then they were putting a dollar in the basket. Still today we put a dollar in the basket. So it really doesn't make a lot of sense. But the main thing about this tradition is that we decline outside contributions, because inevitably, even if they claim that there's no string, I'm sure there would be a string attached. And we want to keep the meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous running properly and smoothly. We don't need encumbrances like some outside contributor trying to then impose undue influence over what happens in the rooms and in the steps of AA. I was really enjoying seeing some new meetings begin in the world of AA and years ago. And one of the new meetings, some of the new guys thought that they would go ahead and rewrite some of the steps to suit them better. And it didn't take long until they began to discover what tremendous processes had been suffered in order to get what we have as far as the steps and the traditions, that these weren't just thrown together by an individual, but they are arrived at through trial and error, rigorous honesty, great experience, and they really are a treasure because of that fact. They're not to be rewritten. There was a legend in AA back when I began, and his name was E.O. back up in the Northwest. And I was really shocked one day when he said that he had gone through the 12 steps and replaced the word we with the word I, thinking that was a good idea. And what I value most about this program is that it's a we program. That's the first word. I think it's the most important word. And I understand what he was getting at. We need to take it personally and really get personally involved and personal ownership in each and every step. But I don't think it's necessary to change the word to I in order to do that. And he died clean and sober, so he helped a lot of people achieve sobriety and recovery. So can't fault him on that. But I just get nervous anytime people are changing words in something that was put together in 1935 and has survived like nothing else in the world has survived. I think we need to honor what we have on the printed page and how it got there. So let's continue, Joseph.
All right, Harold, thank you. My experience with that, Harold, is that everybody's got a little different experience, and they can only speak to their own experience. The thing that annoys me in the meetings is that they talk to their experience in such a way that the newcomer thinks that it's really AA, and it's really not AA. It's their personal experience, and it's an opinion. Opinions are about feelings, not about facts. In AA, we stick to the big book and the 12 and 12 because that's a fact. We stick to that, and we know we can't go wrong. Everything else is personal experience and opinion. You agree?
I agree totally, and it's very important to me to stick to the facts. When I was on drugs and alcohol, I lived my life according to my feelings, and it really got me nowhere fast. It was extremely dangerous, actually. So when I found the rooms of AA and the program of the 12 steps, it became time to live by logic, to live by facts, and to live by action. Feelings really don't matter that much. And I appreciate your focus on the facts. So I value that, Joseph.
Not all logic is based in common sense, but all common sense is based on logic.
There we go.
Let's begin with my own sponsor, Ebby, writes Bill W. in the book Alcoholics Anonymous Comes of Age. When Ebby heard how serious my drinking was, he resolved to visit me. He was in New York. I was in Brooklyn. His resolve was not enough. He had to take action, and he had to spend money. He called me on the phone, and they got into the subway. Total cost, 10 cents. At the level of the telephone booth and subway turnstile, spirituality and money begin to mix. One without the other would have amounted to nothing at all. Right then and there, Ebby established the principle that AA in action calls for the sacrifice of much time and little money. Alcoholics are certainly all or nothing people. Our reactions to money prove that this proves this. As AA emerged from its infancy into adolescence, we swung from the idea that we needed vast sums of money to the notion that AA shouldn't have any. On the other lip were the words, you can't mix AA and money. We shall have to separate the spiritual from the material. We took this violent new track because here and there members had tried to make money out of their AA connections, and we feared it'd be exploited. And then grateful benefactors had endowed clubhouses, and as a result, there was sometimes outside interference in our affairs. We had been presented with a hospital, and almost immediately, the donor's son became its principal patient and would be manager. One AA group was given $5,000 to do with it as it would. The hassle over the chunk of money played havoc for years. Frightened by these complications, some groups refused to have a cent in their treasuries. Anyone who has ever struggled with poverty knows how extremely expensive it is to be poor. James Baldwin. Harold, would you like to pick it up from there?
Sure. Let me read on a bit. Oh, and by the way, that paragraph outlines some of the problems that they actually had and somehow resolved through trial and error. They were given a hospital, and it was a mess, and they were given a large sum of money, and that was a mess, and time after time, they learned their lesson the hard way, and now they can pass it along to us, and we have the benefit of their hard-earned experience. Somerset Maugham said he had heard people speak contemptuously of money. He wondered if they had ever tried to do without it. The POCAA club in Houston, that's the Post Oak Club of Alcoholics Anonymous in Houston, boasts of having $800,000 in their prudent reserve. They defend their rights with a lawyer's delight, that if their landlord might find an occasion to demand them to vacate the property, and that in that area of town the property is so pricey that it would take that amount and much, much more to secure a location in a manner to what we have grown to be accustomed. In their defense, I must confess that some of the best-looking middle-aged women in town have found themselves a prestigious home group address. So my experience with nonprofits in the past is that if there's a tax exemption, it's issued because a group is willing to follow certain guidelines, and not having a large amount of money is one of those guidelines. To break that rule causes an annulment and a retroactive removal of the tax exemption. So it's probably wise to edit that part of the radio program off and not let that be known.
That's a thought, isn't it?
Yeah, we don't need an annulment with Alcoholics Anonymous.
No.
Yeah,
well,
they said that they weren't connected.
They don't pay anything to the, from what I understand, they don't pay anything into the treasuries back to county, or they don't pay anything into AA in New York either.
Well, when it comes to the IRS, I mean, the IRS has hired a whole bunch of new agents to find people that are not following the rules. Anyway, despite these misgivings, we had to recognize the fact that AA had to function. Meeting places cost something. To save whole areas from turmoil, small offices had to be set up, telephones installed, and a few full-time secretaries hired. Over many protests, these things were accomplished. We saw that if we weren't the man coming in the door, we saw that if they weren't, the man coming in the door couldn't get a break. These simple services would require small sums of money, which could and would pay ourselves. Which we could and would pay ourselves. At last, the pendulum stopped swinging and pointed straight at Tradition 7, as it reads today. Norman Vincent Peale said, "Empty pockets never held anyone back. Only empty heads and empty hearts can do that." Very true. And one more paragraph here. In this connection, Bill likes to tell the following pointed story. He explains that when Jack Alexander's Saturday Evening Post piece broke in 1941, thousands of frantic letters from distraught alcoholics and their families hit the foundation letterbox in New York. Quote, "Our office staff," Bill says, "consisted of two people, one devoted secretary and myself. How could this landslide of appeals be met? We'd have to have some full-time help, that was sure. So we asked the AA groups for voluntary contributions. Would they send us $1 a member a year? Otherwise, this heartbreaking mail would have to go unanswered. The postman, tell me something. How much mail can a dead postman deliver? It looked like the letters were DOA. The ever-growing pile was high as an elephant's eye, and the blunted tusk a hopeless cry of a certain lost redemption, a last chance grasp at the brass ring only to find the envelope marked unopened for the lack of a nickel, no more than a dime. The worth of a soul, who can count its value? Who can appraise its worth? An immortal soul is beyond all price. Of course, more than the price of a cup of coffee, more than a price of a coffee cup, as long as it's not my morning's first. Joseph?
Thank you, Harold. To my surprise, the response to this group was slow. I got mighty sore about it. Looking at this avalanche of mail one morning at the office, I paced up and down, ranting how responsible and tightwad my fellow members were. Just then, an old acquaintance stuck a tousled and aching head in the door. He was our prize Slippy. I could see he had an awful hangover. Remembering some of my own, my heart filled with pity. I motioned him to my inside cubicle and produced a $5 bill. As my total income was $30 a week at the time, this was a fairly large donation. Lois really needed the money for groceries. But that didn't stop me. The intense relief on my face, my friend's face, warmed my heart. I felt especially virtuous. As I thought of all the ex-drunks who wouldn't even send the foundation a dollar apiece, and here I was gladly making a $5 investment to fix a hangover. A miser, cheapskate, snipe, snout, penny pincher, piker, Scrooge, skinflint, or tightwad. There's a Yiddish proverb, with money in your pocket, you are wise, you are handsome, and you sing well, too. Depression is terrifying, and elation is death-defying, and as attractive as she may be for a moment, you are grandiose beyond reality when seeking to rise above sanity. In other words, this was insane. You know, this is a form of insanity.
Yeah.
Depression is terrifying, as elation is death-defying, and attractive as she may be for a moment, you are grandiose beyond reality when seeking to rise above sanity. The meeting that night was at the New York's old 24th Street Clubhouse. During the intermission, the treasurer gave a timid talk on how broke the club was. That was in a period when you couldn't mix money in AA. But finally he said it, the landlord would put us out if we didn't pay up. He concluded his remarks by saying, "Now, boys, please go heavier on the hat tonight, will you? I will lift up mine eyes unto the bills, from whence cometh my help. My help cometh even from you who have found heaven instead of the dirt. The landlord will suffer our foot to be moved and to keep it the roof over the head and to some even a bed. So please get out the lead and fill the coffers with silver of copper instead of copper. Otherwise, we have to fold our tent and our primary purpose will go asunder." In other words, boys, put some silver in there, otherwise we're getting kicked out. I heard all this quite plainly as I was piously trying to convert a newcomer who sat next to me. The hat came in my direction, and I reached into my pocket, still working on my prospect. I fumbled and came up with a 50-cent piece. Somehow it looked like a big, heavy coin. Hastily, I dropped it back and fished out a dime, which clinked thinly as I dropped it in the hat. Hats never got folding money in those days. A dime over easy goes in the hat, as no one can see my minimal generosity. But the beau geste, a gesture noble from form for meaningless in substance, for we seek recognition and a platform of adulation that all might witness my nobleness of spirit. Noblesse oblige. One must act in a fashion that conforms to one's position and with the reputation that one has earned, if not in fact, certainly by imagination. Giving a large sum of money anonymously was like winking at a pretty girl in a dark room. You're the only one who knows what you're doing. Then I woke up. Who had boasted my generosity that morning was treating my own club worse than the distant alcoholic who had forgotten to send the foundation a dollar. I realized that my $5 gift to the Slippy was an ego feeding proposition, bad for him and bad for me. There was a place in the A where spirituality and money would mix, and that was in the hat. Ego has a voracious appetite. The more you feed it, the hungrier it gets. Nathaniel Broner.
That's a potent paragraph right there when he admits that his giving to the slippy was an ego-feeding proposition. And the real place where money and spirituality mix is in the hat. I mean, that's heavy duty. That's very important. That's worthy of some thought and consideration. Joseph?
Thank you, Harold. Did you like that next saying? Ego has a voracious appetite. The more you feed it, the hungrier it gets.
Yes, that's true, too.
The letter of the law bringeth death, and the spirit of the law giveth life. We knocked it into a cocked hat. We would be self-supporting through our own contribution and let God do the rest. There's another story about money. One night in 1948, the trustees of the foundation were having their quarterly meeting. The agenda discussion included a very important question. A certain lady had died. When her will was read, it was discovered she had left Alcoholics Anonymous in trust with the Alcoholic Foundation a sum of $10,000. The question was, should AA take the gift? Every gift has a problem just waiting to be unwrapped. What a debate we had on that one. The foundation was really hard up just then. The groups weren't sending in enough for the support of the office. We had been tossing in all the book income, and even that hadn't been enough. The reserve was melting like snow in springtime. We needed that $10,000. Maybe, some said, the groups will never fully support the office. We can't let it shut down. It's far too vital. Yes, let's take the money. Let's take all such donations in the future. We're going to need them. Should we partake and gain the ease and comfort that comes from the first gift? Or are we just setting ourselves up to go on the merry-go-round on a money spree? You like that? The ease and comfort of the first gift?
Yes.
The ease and comfort of the first drink? The ease and comfort of the first gift?
Yes. Right on.
Then came the opposition. They pointed out the foundation for it. Already I knew of a total of $500,000 set aside for AA and the wills of people still alive. Heaven only knew how much there was we hadn't heard about. If outside donations were declined, absolutely cut off, then the foundation would one day become rich. Moreover, at the slightest intimidation to the general public from our trustees that we needed money, we could become immensely rich. We could be drunk with money, and the hangover could be oblivion. The poor always have heartfelt charity, for they know the lack in life, while the rich are too busy counting, and the very rich can't be reached, for they remain in the fantasy of extended flight. You like that, Harold?
Yes.
Compared to this prospect, the $10,000 on the consideration wasn't much, but like the alcoholic's first drink, it would, if taken, inevitably set up a disastrous chain reaction. Where would that land us? Moreover, whoever pays the piper is apt to call the tune. And if the AA Foundation obtained money from outside sources, its trustees might be tempted to run things without reference to the wishes of AA as a whole. He who pays the piper calls the tune. If this guy is from Hamlin, we could all be drowning on cue. relieve the responsibility every alcoholic should shrug and say, oh, the foundation is wealthy. Why should I bother? Well, there goes that. The pressure of that fat treasury would surely tempt the board to invent all kinds of schemes to do good with such funds, and so divert AA money from its primary purpose. The moment that happened, our fellowship's confidence would be shaken. The board would be isolated and would fall under heavy attack of criticism from both AA and the public. These were the possibilities, pro and con. Harold?
So we see the problem take shape and the very real consequences. It's great that people were clear thinking enough to contrast what might happen in each situation. And I think most of this is based on what did happen at one point in time or another. So let's continue on.
When we meet and defeat the temptation to take large gifts, we are only prudent. But when we are generous with the hat, we give a token that we are grateful for all our blessings, and evidence that we are eager to share what we have found with all those who still suffer. It's on page 221 of The Language of the Heart. See how I put other stuff in there? Then our trustees wrote a bright page of AA history. They declared for the principle that AA must always stay poor, bare running expenses, plus a prudent reserve, would henceforth be the foundation's financial policy. Difficult as it was, they officially declined the $10,000, ouch, and adopted a formal, airtight resolution that all such future gifts might be similarly declined at the moment. We believe the principle of corporate poverty was firmly and finally embedded in AA. Thank God for poverty that makes us free and lets us go unobtrusive way. Glad of the sum of rain, upright, serene, humane, contented with the fortune of a day. William Bliss Carman. I'm going to read that again. Thank God for poverty that makes and keeps us free and lets us go unobtrusive in our unobtrusive way. Glad of the sun and rain, upright, serene, humane, contented with the fortune of a day. Sounds like AA, doesn't it?
Yes.
So what's your experience with that, Harold?
Well, the main thing is what I relate to that is that the thought that I can drink like normal people ever, that has to be crushed. And so as I do that, I get rid of my self-sufficiency, and when I do that, I then learn to rely on God, and that's what it's all about for me. My experience in the rooms of AA is about learning to trust God. God has a plan, and at my work, I don't work for any particular hospital or clinic. I work for God. I'm asking what God's will is, and I'm asking to please, Lord, make me useful to you. And so that all fits together along with Tradition 7, which means that we need God, and that is that. Joseph?
Thank you, Harold. Yeah, I always have to look at my own motives, too, especially with Rum Radio and the efforts I put in and all that. And, you know, and I'm a pusher. That's my personality. I'm in-your-face kind of guy. And when I'm on a task, whether it's for money or whatever it might be, I'm very focused. And sometimes I have to question myself if I'm trying to push it harder than God wants me to. How much of it is this Joseph's will, and how much of this is God's will? I know we have to take certain actions. You know, I believe that we're saved by grace after all that we can do, not after all that we can talk, not after all that we can think, not even after all that we can pray. The magic words in AA is action and more action. The faith without works is dead. But when does the action become too much action? When you become dependent on the outcome? Harold?
Well, you hit it on the head. We are responsible for planting the seeds. The end result is up to God. And so what I do is the scriptures are my daily bread. I spend a lot of time in the scriptures on a daily basis, and really enjoy and love discovering how God thinks and how God looks at things. And then with my work and my recreation and the timing throughout the day, I respond to the urges and desires that God gives me, and with a foundation in the truth and a love for the scriptures, God's word, God's daily bread, with that as the foundation, I can go throughout the day doing as I'm guided, doing as I want to do, because I measure everything against the scriptures. And so that, as you wrote, thank God for poverty that makes and keeps us free and lets us go our unobtrusive way, glad of the sun and rain, upright, serene, humane, contented with the fortune of a day. And when Jesus said blessed are the poor in spirit, he means people that are not self-sufficient, but people who want the Spirit of God like a drowning man wants a breath of air. And so I think that's really where it's at as far as poverty.
We've got
5 or 6 minutes.
Right. I believe it's more like we're just about finished with this. We went a little quicker than I expected, because there's a lot in seven. You know, they have the two different it's a lot of stuff in seven. And I was kind of surprised when I wrote to it that it was going to be the longest tradition. And you can see where money, you know, like the one like with Post O, how money is that. And the funny thing about it, they have been asked to leave from their perch. And they found another place, and I think it's called the Northwest Shopping Center at 110 and 610. You know where that is? It's right around the block from where they were. But that shopping center is almost empty. It's practically an empty shopping center. So it's probably going to have a plenty of parking. No problem. They got the whole shopping center over there, and they're gonna have to remodel and do all kinds of stuff over there. So I don't know, but that's what I heard tonight. That's what they'll end up. And maybe it's good that they had that kind of money. I don't know. I don't think it's healthy for a club to have that kind of money. I think it goes against the traditions. I think there's a lack of God consciousness when you do that. You're relying on money instead of God to take care of this thing. But I'm only one voice, and it's not my club.
And I agree that if we're relying on a large sum of money rather than God, it's not healthy. And who's to say they're even accurate about the amount? Maybe they're lying.
I don't think so. I got it from the was the chairman of the board, who was the treasurer, and he was my grand sponsor. So I'm pretty confident he was even surprised when he told me, and I said, "You got to be kidding me." And especially since they didn't donate to the other AA facilities. I mean, I thought that was really kind of chintz, because I suggested, why don't you buy, big books for the newcomer, right? And their response was that we have so many newcomers that come and go, we're not going to do it.
No books.
like the books aren't that expensive, newcomers pack it with that kind of money in there, and you would think, so what? So they come and go, sometimes they don't have enough money to buy a big book.
And so that's right, and from what I understand, the movement of Alcoholics Anonymous makes most of its income from the sale of literature, so they should be ready and willing to support that branch.
Yeah, and AA as a whole is having difficulties, from what I understand, in their finances right now. And the Grapevine is another one under financial stress. And I think primarily because people aren't reading like they read before. The Grapevine isn't being pushed like it was before because of the internet. Now you can get the Grapevine on the internet too. I think you can subscribe to it that way, so that helps. But I think a lot of it has to do like with primary, with those kids smoking cigarettes, not putting a dollar in the basket. Well, let me finish up the last paragraph. When these facts were printed, there was a profound reaction to people. Familiar with endless drives for charitable funds, AA presented a strange and refreshing spectacle. Approving editorials here and abroad generated a wave of confidence in the integrity of Alcoholics Anonymous that pointed out that the irresponsible had become responsible, and that by making financial independence a part of its tradition, Alcoholics Anonymous had revived an ideal that its era had almost forgotten. The handout, the beggar, and the fool was no longer our domain. We will support ourselves and our cause with hope and hard work and ask God to use us as a tool. And that's how I ended it.
There you go.
Harold, and I think that's essential. Any last words?
Well, see you on the radio. That's my last word. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, Harold. Glad you could make it. And see you on the radio, rumradio.org.